Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 388, and it is recorded on the 4th of August of 2021. Today, we have the privilege to talk with our very special guest, April Denham, about the art of the possible with Power Platform using Azure. And on Teams with me today, we have myself, Cynthia, Kale, Sujit, Kendall, and our special guest, April. Before we get into our topic, as usual, we have a couple updates to share. I know Kale and Sujit both put a couple of them in there. Kale, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So first one, I just have two here. One is about the Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare. So there's been enhancement even since we initially did the Fire Azure API stuff back in 2019. So now that's been even more enhanced with this thing called Azure Healthcare APIs, which are basically specially tailored kind of APIs that are built for ingestion, maintenance, and management, and then persistence of data to the Microsoft Healthcare Cloud for Healthcare. So what this means is, like, it makes it easier for our partners or those who are consuming data or you know, ingesting, like, you know, capturing data from, like, radiology or something like that. But basically having those things be much more easily accessed in a secure way, obviously, but allowing someone to see someone's history much more easy because it's using these standards and then this standard API on top of it. So it's a good thing for healthcare all in general, but, you know, this is a heavily regulated industry. So making sure that we have the proper security and constraints and things in place there is obviously key. But, you know, that's what this service is kind of there to kind of help. The second one I had is around from Mark Krasinovich is about Azure Virtual Machine Availability Transparency. So that's a lot of words, but basically when things go wrong, having more transparency about, like, why did this happen, as opposed to having an event log or some sort of a error log that basically says, hey, your VM went down at this time. Well, why did it go down? I'm actually surprised, you know, the amount of transparency that's coming back. It's exposing some of the stuff that's inside Azure, like the top of rack routers and things like that, the hardware that's actually in place there to be more transparent with customers about, you know, if there was a power outage or there was something that caused a problem in this rack that happened to have some of your nodes in it. So it's a good thing. Obviously, we don't like downtime, but when there is downtime, knowing what caused it so we can mitigate it is obviously key.
Yep, and I have one update. This is the new immutable storage with versioning for blob storage is now in public preview. Just a recap from what immutable storage is. This is your write once, read many kind of blob storage. So, you know, you can write something to blob, and you can only write it once, and then you can read any number of times. Of course, you could put some policies on it to say, okay, this cannot be deleted for so many weeks, months, whatever time. It has to be kept in that state. And you can also put a legal hold on it. So you could say, you know, if a court says, okay, you know, I want to legally protect this blob object, they could do that. And only until the legal hold is removed can you delete it. Now they've added the new feature where you can version it. And so what that means is that you can go back, you can apply policies and go back to say, okay, all my existing blobs that I have in there, apply this policy, right? Make them such that they cannot be deleted or they, you know, they have these legal holds on them and things like that. So you can go back in time and do things that, you know, you had not done originally. So that's a new feature which is in preview, and it's currently in preview in the French and the Canadian regions. I assume that's where the demand is for such a feature. And so just something to keep in mind there.
Awesome. Thank you. Anything else from anyone? If not, April. Oh, Kendall, are you going to go?
No worries. Let's get into it.
Okay. April, would you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you do at Microsoft?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks so much for having me, first of all. So my name is April Dunham. I'm a Power Platform Developer Advocate here at Microsoft. So kind of cool role that I have, being able to advocate for and to developers, anyone using the Power Platform. My day-to-day is kind of all about content creation. How can I identify any gaps that we might have in documentation, making sure that we have any content related to the Power Platform necessary so that if anyone wants to start using it or needs documentation for it, that they're covered. So that's kind of my focus on. With that, I kind of come from a developer background myself. So I was a .NET and a C# SharePoint developer before getting into Power Platform. So getting developers using low-code tech like Power Platform is something that I'm super passionate about. And we just released like an ebook on the Fusion development process for the Power Platform, talking through that story about how we can loop in with custom connectors and code like that to be able to pull other APIs into Power Platform solutions. So definitely an area that I'm super passionate about.
So follow-up question. Kendall, go ahead.
No, you got it.
Oh, I was going to ask about custom connectors. So as a pro developer, what and why should I care about Power Platform?
That's a big question, right? That everyone has. Well, you know, I think there's a few ways to think about it, right? I mean, for one, for me, how I got into it and in my story, so maybe that would be helpful. I was building a lot of custom solutions, which is fine, and you know, MVC applications, you know, SharePoint, web parks, things along those lines. But you know, what I was finding is, I mean, that stuff just can take time. When I started learning about low code tech and specifically the Power Platform, since I was already obviously developing in the Microsoft ecosystem, it really piqued my interest because it seemed like something that could save me a lot of time. And I'm not necessarily like the world's laziest developer, but anything that I can do to help me save time in what I'm doing, I mean, I'm all for, right? So I started looking into it. And then one of the things that is really cool to me is it's not just a low code tool. It's not just a drag and drop interface. It's so extensible. So I can do stuff like if I already have an existing API, like the custom connectors story there, I can expose that API via a connector just using OpenAPI. I already have that built. I don't have to do any additional legwork. Now I have the ability to extend that and build a quick mobile application with Power Apps in what, minutes, hours, where it would have took me days, weeks, months to do that if I was doing it, you know, the old school, the custom code way, right? So it's all about saving time for me and just giving you another tool in your tool belt that you can have. It might not be the end all be all. Obviously, there's always going to be use cases where we still want to use custom code, but it's just another way that we can extend and embrace those Fusion teams and have more people we can work with to build business solutions.
Yeah, and just tagging onto that, April, on the custom connectors. So, you know, there's a lot of connectors in there right now by default. So I could use those. Like the first thing is, at least my recommendation when people start using this is look what's in there first to see if it kind of meets your need. But then let's say there is one that's not, and then I want to use it. So I can do something like myself. But what if I want to, is there like a marketplace? Like what's that process like if I want to share my connector with the world kind of thing?
Yeah, super glad you asked because there's some new functionality that was just released along these lines. So there's a new program called the Independent Publisher Connector Program. So again, to echo what you just said, yeah, definitely check out the connectors that are already there because there's over 500 different connectors to all kinds of first and third party services that might already fit your need. But if there's one that's not there that you want to connect to, like say Spotify or something, because that's a recent connector someone just built. We can do that, create the connector with the OpenAPI file, and then there's a GitHub repo that we have at Microsoft as part of this program. You add that to, it can get verified and show right now in the app experience inside of Power Automate as an independent publisher connector. So you can share that with the community and build that. And eventually, you know, right now it's in Power Automate. We don't know know in the future if it will make it into, say, Power Apps or something, but that's definitely a program that we can use to be able to share different connectors with the community so that we can have even more than the 500 connectors we already have.
Awesome. Yeah, so I have a couple of questions. One of my questions is really around, obviously, if you go in traditional application development, you're coding in Visual Studio, you're building out an MVC application, you're worried about the deployment model, all of these things. How can I determine if, hey, you know, Power Platform might be a better fit for this, you know, and then from that perspective, what would change, right? Are you still deploying? Is it hosted? Can you actually do this from like an external facing application perspective, or is it more for internal applications? Can you just talk a little bit to that? And then my second question, which I'll get to at some point, is just talking about some of the broader integrations with the Azure platform, right? What are ways you can actually bring in some of these other Azure services and really leverage the power of those in collaboration with the Power Platform?
Yeah, great question. So I'll touch first on the when would you use Power Apps, for example, and what would be some of the use cases? Because you mentioned, is this something that would be external or internal? So with Power Apps, we have a few different types of applications we can build. There's Canvas applications, which are called that because it's a blank canvas that you can build and just drag and drop controls and build in any connector that you want and mix and match and all that. Then we have model-driven applications and then something called Power Apps Portals. So with the model-driven applications and the Canvas apps, those are intended to be apps that you build for your organization within your tenant. So that's kind of the scope of those. We can do things like integrate with Azure B2C to be able to have other people access it, but it's not going to be a kind of public-facing, consumer-facing approach that you would take with that. But that's where Power Apps portals do come into play. Those are can be anonymous, external facing, almost like websites that we built on top of the Power Platform, leveraging the Dataverse model and database there to be able to have public facing websites. Lots of the stuff that you might have seen with COVID vaccinations, actually, those portals that you would go to register for that were built on Power Apps portals, actually. So a lot of that stuff. So there are different methods that we can use focused on different audiences, whether it's internal or external facing. And then really, as far as trying to decide, is Power Apps a fit? I mean, I think it depends on, A, like, what are you trying to connect to and what is your scope there? I mean, with one of the big benefits to me of building something in a Power App is the fact that I can build it once and it works in any modern browser. It works natively in iOS and it works natively in Android just out of the box. I don't have to do anything additional, you know, programming wise to make it fit into that. So, I mean, if that's, you know, time constraints are a concern, if you're working with other people, again, I keep talking about those fusion teams, but if maybe someone already built kind of a prototype and you can just tag on to that, it can really be anything from departmental solutions to, I've seen great enterprise grade solutions built on Power Apps. So more often than not, it can be a great tool to use. And we have support, another important thing to touch on, for that whole developer lifecycle with building solutions on the Power Platform. There's ALM support, there's Power Platform, GitHub Actions, native Visual CLI. There's all of that baked in so that you can really push and deploy and have the traditional application lifecycle that you would expect with custom code.
Yeah, I had a question for you. I mean, can you hear me? I changed my microphone. I want to make sure you can still hear me. Okay, thank you. So, you know, April, you mentioned Power Apps, but then you also briefly, I heard Power Automate being mentioned. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on what is Power Automate and how, you know, how one might use it if they're building a Power App, for example.
Yeah, great question. Power Automate. So Power Apps obviously is the low-code rapid application development tool. Power Automate, I like to call it kind of the glue that ties everything together for the Power Platform, really, because that's what allows us to do workflow and the process automation side of things. So Power Automate has really kind of expanded in scope over the years. So we have things called Cloud Flows where we can do workflows with all of those different connectors, right? SharePoint, obviously that's my background. So I used a lot of SharePoint-based workflows, document approval, scenarios like that. But we also have newer functionality for robotic process automation with Power Automate Desktop. So we can even go beyond automating and things within, you know, SaaS solutions into automating things on our desktop and to legacy console applications and things like that. And then even one of the things about Power Automate that is super new and that's really exciting for me is something called Process Advisor. So that's taking it even a step further. If you're not sure exactly how best to automate a process or what the process is that you think needs to be automated, Process Advisor uses the power of that robotic process automation capability inside Power Automate to be able to allow you to run through and record what you're doing, what is the process, and it will show a map, the diagram of what that process is, help you identify bottlenecks in the process, and how to best automate it. So it's really a holistic solution, taking you all the way from figuring out what your process is, what your gaps are, how to automate it, and then automating it either with RPA or with Cloud Flows. And oh, a quick tip of that, if people that don't know, Power Automate is actually based off of Azure Logic App. So if you use Logic Apps, Power Automate is very similar, just really kind of different audiences. This is more a drag and drop. The scope is a little bit different. There's more, a little bit more you can do with Power Automate than Logic Apps.
Yeah, real quick, I just wanted to jump in on that. That was going to be my question. Like the connectors, I guess we'll call them, in the Power platform, how does that correspond to the Logic Apps? Like, so if I created one and I shared it with the community, as you mentioned earlier on the Power side, does that automatically show up in the Logic Apps, or is that a separate marketplace? Or like, how does that work? Like, so that it shows up everywhere? Like,
that's a good question, actually. I'm not sure that it automatically shows up in the Logic Apps marketplace. I know that you can build a connector, and that's one of the great benefits of connectors on the model itself, is that you build it once and you can use it inside Power Apps, Power Automate, and Logic Apps. But as far as like the publishing model and getting it into Logic Apps, I'm not honestly 100% sure of how that is, since I focus more on the Power Automate side of things.
No worries.
We can ask our Logic Apps person. Mm-hmm. There's another episode coming very soon. April, I'm curious about the idea of fusion teams. Is it that our pro developers continue to focus on their time in VS Code and the citizen developers living in Power Land? Or what would it look like?
Yeah, I mean, it can be a little bit of both, honestly. It kind of depends on what you want to do. A common thing that we have seen with these fusion teams is maybe the low-code dev, citizen dev, whatever you want to call it, being the person that maybe builds the UI prototype, say in a Power App in a solution. And then, yeah, the code-first developer not having to worry about the UI if that's something they don't care about, and just focusing on the back-end integrations and the back-end services side of things. So it is a really common approach to this fusion development process that we see. But again, it can be something that maybe if you do like the UI and you just side of things and you want to be able to do that faster, maybe you just leverage Power Apps for that and then integrate with back-end services, Azure services, and all of that. So it's really, it's what you make it. It's just the fact that the ability that we can give non-traditional developers the ability to help with that process, whether it's help with the workflow side of things, help with building the UI of the Power App and all of that, because it really speeds up things, because they're the ones that are going to be most familiar with the business process itself. So you don't have to, again, probably worry about a lot of the logistics if you can have those people be a part of the team and the app building team.
And April, how does this work from a pricing perspective? Like, always the big mystery to me about how Power Apps work, because, you know, if I wanted to write a Power App, for example, maybe, you know, I have a small share it with a small project that I'm working on, you know, is this like a whole Microsoft 365 kind of deal I got to set up before doing it? Or like, what's the entry point for somebody who wants to get started with Power Apps?
Great question. A few ways to get started. So obviously, you know, Power Platform is part of Microsoft 365. If you're just wanting to get your feet wet, though, on it and just see what it can do, we have a Power Apps developer plan. So you can go sign up for that, use that in tandem with the Microsoft 365 developer plan that gives you that E5 license. And the Power Apps developer plan gives you the premium capability of Power Apps so that you can start developing and just seeing what it's like, seeing if it's something for you. So that's always where I point people to first. And then, of course, if you want to use that within your organization, there's a few different, you know, licensing models for that. We get what's called a seeded version of the Power Platform, which gives you the ability to connect to some of the Microsoft 365 services and automate those like SharePoint and OneDrive and all of that. And then we have kind of the paid tiers, depending on what you want to do. So if you want to get really heavy into some of the integrations with Azure, you know, Azure SQL, any of those premium connectors, because we have standard connectors, we have premium. If you want to do a lot of like custom connectors and all of that, then you can do different licensing models, which they've recently reduced the price of, which is great news. So there's a per application license and there's a per user license. So the per app license being you just license a user for a single application if you're just doing, you know, one or two things with that, or if you're wanting to go all in on the Power Platform and build a lot of applications, you can go with that per user license and get unlimited applications to use per user.
And just a quick follow-up on that is, you know, just like you, I also started off being a .NET developer, not so much on the SharePoint side, more on like, you know, server side and whatnot, and WinForms applications. But, you know, for someone like us, you know, how should we approach Power Apps as a programming model? You know, is it object-oriented? Is that the way to think about it? Is it more scripting? Like, what's the mindset going into building a Power App?
Yeah, so with Power Apps, we recently gave the kind of the programming language a name to what we build in Power Apps Canvas Apps, and it's called PowerFX. And the reason for the name behind is it's what it is based off of. The language itself is Microsoft Excel. So if basically Excel formulas kind of on steroids is PowerFX and how we build Power Apps Canvas apps. So, yeah, it's not like, you know, a C# traditional language in that way. So it's very, very Excel like. That's one of the great things about it, though, and why it's so easy from, you know, a business user perspective, though, to get started. If you already know about like 80%, I think, of the Excel functions that we have translate pretty directly to PowerFX plus more. So super easy and simple to get started with. But yes, it is kind of a different paradigm there from, you know, an object-oriented language to something like that.
April, when you talk about the COVID response apps, and then I thought about, like, is there a bot component within the Power Platform?
Yeah, glad you brought that up. Yeah, so with Power Platform, there's four main technologies, right? We have Power Apps, which we've discussed already, Power Automate, Power BI, which I'm sure most of us have heard of because that's the oldest one, right, for dashboard reporting. And then the newest one being Power Virtual Agents. So that is our way to create low-code chatbots based off of bot framework with a drag-and-drop interface. And when I mentioned Power Automate was the glue, it really shows when we're building bots in Power Virtual Agents, because if we want to do anything actionable, like go get information from a database and return that to a user, maybe to find their order information or something like that, we can actually just call a flow that will go do that thing from our bot. And that can return the information back in Power Virtual Agents in there. So, yeah, we do have pretty much the full business solution capability from applications to bots to workflows and reporting all baked in.
And I guess the nice part about it is that it's all running on Azure without you having to worry about, you know, any Azure resources or things like that. It's just there, you know, that it's running on a trusted platform right there.
Exactly. You know, and that speaks to security as well. It's all backed by Azure security and the security model and all of that.
Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at some of the slogans behind you. I like the one that says Power Apps, nailed it. That's really nice.
yes, that was a Power Apps app building competition I did years ago, and I won first place there and got that cool little custom made plaque.
Cynthia, we want to wrap up here?
Oh, I was about to ask another question.
Please do. I want to be respectful of April's time as well. Go ahead.
We can make this the last one then. In terms of Azure integration, I know you talked about the custom connectors and using the different connectors that already exist. What are some of the other ones that we can look into as a pro dev?
Yeah, well, one thing I wanted to point out with custom connectors is we also have native capability to integrate with Azure API management. So, you know, the topic of licensing came up earlier. And, you know, if you say you wanted to connect to an API, if you do that custom connector way, you do have to pay for that additional licensing. But there's something called Dataverse for Teams that I did want to make sure that I bring up. So if you want to build a business application and have that hosted inside of Microsoft Teams, there's some versions of the Power Platform and the Dataverse database specifically for that. And as part of that, we can actually connect to Azure API management and the APIs that are hosted within that inside of the Dataverse for Teams applications at no additional cost. So that is another like model that we have there, where if you are wanting to build Teams-centric applications, where we can more easily extend that, all included in our Microsoft 365 licensing that comes with Teams. So that's another big integration area. Obviously, Azure Functions is another way. We just did a webinar actually a week or two ago talking about how we can leverage Azure Functions for serverless APIs with OpenAPI and connect that with custom connectors. So if you want to do kind of more lightweight, you know, singular API type scenarios. And then there's all kinds of integrations with like Data Lake, obviously SQL Server, Cognitive Services is another big one. We have like mixed reality support. There's all kind of AI support baked in. But if we can do more for, you know, forms processing and object recognition and all this stuff in Azure, it's just really the possibilities are endless. We can integrate with almost anything in Azure with the Power Platform.
Awesome. Any parting thoughts before we wrap up here, April? Any call to action for our listeners, what they should try out?
Yeah, I would just suggest, you know, if you haven't explored the Power Platform yet, definitely go out and get that free developer plan, because I think if you use it and just try to build something in it, then you'll see the power of it and why it's just so easy to use and can bring a lot of value. So if you go to aka.ms/powerapps-devplan, that'll take you right there where you can sign up for that and get started. The other one I will say, if you are, you know, a traditional developer looking to get into it and you're not sure what that Fusion Dev stuff means and like where you fit in and like what a typical process would look like, do check out that learning path, because it really shows a sample scenario of here's an application you might want to build, here's how Fusion Teams work, here's how you can integrate an API with custom connectors into a Power App. So if you go to aka.ms/learn-fusion-dev, that'll take you to that learning path there to check that out. So those would be my two main call to actions.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun.
Thank you, April.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.